Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 42 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. And History Nebraska. Nebraska's archaeologists work side by side with private landowners to protect Nebraska's archaeological heritage. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. We'll talk with artists today whose work is featured at Gallery 9 this month. Championship cowboy poet R.P. Smith will recite a poem for us, which includes a unique lesson in irrigation tube maintenance. And an author will visit with me about the moving and emotional journey he took with his best friend. When your journey this morning leads you to a place with no radio, you can keep listening to Friday Live online at netnebraska.org or stream the show using the NET Nebraska mobile app. We'll start with a years-long tradition at Homestead National Monument in Beatrice. The Tallgrass Prairie Fiddle Festival will be held there once again tomorrow with a competition for acoustic bands and fiddlers, as well as workshops and an on-site luthier. And here to tell us more are Rangers Susan Cook and Nebraska-based folk musician and half of the duo Greenblatt & C, David C. Welcome this morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
So there's some rules for competitors for this thing, Susan. What do contestants need to think about for the various divisions of competition?
Well, they need to be paying attention to the three songs we asked them to play, a Hodana waltz and a tune of choice. And it has to be in existence in 1936 when the park was created.
That's the tricky part.
That's
you got to do a little
one.
Research.
Yes.
And
yes.
David, you're part of the workshops happening tomorrow. What's your role in the event?
Right. Well, my wife, Debbie Greenblatt, gives a free fiddle workshop at 10. And then after that, there'll be a kind of a big jam session. And then at 11:30, I'm giving a harmonica workshop on the key of C diatonic harmonica. It's the standard 10-hole harmonica that you see traditionally, but it has to be in the key of C for this to work. Each one of the holes is numbered 1 through 10. And so by referring to those numbers, it makes it easy for people to participate.
I see. Very cool. So anybody could learn to play.
Could do it.
Those harmonicas are available in the gift shop, too.
If I set a stopwatch to you, David, how long does it take for someone to learn a melody?
Well, we're going to be starting with a very simple tune from the mid-1800s, and it'll take about 2 minutes.
2 minutes. So there you go. You can make music in 2 minutes. What do you find is most difficult for people when they first start playing harmonica?
Well, some people get a little confused, believe it or not, just for the blowing and the drawing. And
right.
Once you start playing a tune, if there's a sequence of blow, draw, and then another draw note, you want to just keep blow, drawing. And once you start to fumble, it sometimes gets intimidating. The other thing is there's three octaves on the diatonic harmonica, and each one is constructed differently. So if you learn in the middle to begin with, it makes life easier.
Okay, sounds good. Well, now, Susan, you have a guest coming tomorrow who is a luthier. Who is that guest, and what is she doing there?
So Marilyn Wallen is the luthier, and so if you don't know what a luthier is, it's someone who fixes instruments. So what she does is she's there to, if strings break or something breaks or it's not in tune quite right, she's there, and she's free of charge to our fiddlers who are competing. We've also had people just bring in something, and you know, so she'll work with them on what she can and can't work on, but
nice.
She is amazing on what she can fix, and she also makes instruments, so she'll have a few of her things out too, so you can see her talent.
Very good. And then in advance of the event, if someone is not a musician, there's all kinds of things for someone to do at the park.
There is, and in fact, something new. We have the Geo Astro RV volunteers. They are two retired science teachers, and they travel. They live in their RV, and they have a solar-powered trailer. They have a telescope that you have to use a ladder to get into to, or
wow.
get up to see
uh-huh.
the eyepiece. But they travel living in national parks and giving programs. So we have them for this weekend. So to kind of add some fun to this, from 9 to 11 p.m., not daytime, if it is nice, they will be out and about during the day because they have the filters that you can look at the sun. In fact, earlier on when we did have sun to look at, people were seeing solar flares with this telescope. Right. It was really cool.
Well, we'll hope for good weather because rain is really the last thing that you need in the southeast part of the state.
Yes. But anyway, for the evening program, we also have Ryan Paul, who does Native American folklore with constellations. So he tells the origin of the constellations with the stars. So those two programs happen Friday and Saturday night at 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. And they happen even if it's bad weather because we have the ability to move in with both. The Star Lord can move in, and we actually have a projector that puts the entire constellation on the ceiling and the walls, so he can see. He will actually move the constellations with the stories.
That's cool.
It's super cool to watch. And the Astro RV people have a different program. It's a NASA-approved program that they give, but they'll move inside.
Okay, yeah. So there's plans even if it rains.
Yes, and bring a picnic because we also have food vendors on site.
Okay, the Tallgrass Prairie Fiddle Festival. Everything gets rolling with fiddle and harmonica workshops tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. and on-site luthier if your fiddle or banjo needs a little fixer-upper attention. And fiddlers and bands of all various kinds will perform and compete throughout the day. Plus, the buildings will be open, too. And what time again, Susan? Do the events tonight start again?
9 p.m. Don't forget, there's $3,400 of prize money being won tomorrow.
All right. So very exciting and interesting long day for you then tomorrow, too.
It's a fun day. It's really a fun day.
There'll be kids maybe as young as 5 or 6, and there might be senior citizens that are in their 80s playing. So
90-year-old.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. All generations.
We have three different divisions plus an acoustic band contest.
Susan Cook is a ranger at the Homestead National Monument in Beatrice. And David C. is a musician who plays dozens of instruments and for years has traveled the state teaching and performing. He and Debbie Greenblatt make up the Greenblatt and C. folk duo. Susan and David, have a great time at the Tallgrass Fiddle Festival.
Thanks, Genevieve.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And for more details about the Tallgrass Festival, head over to the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. The 23rd annual Buffalo Common Storytelling Festival takes place in McCook a week from today, with events starting at 8:30 a.m. Friday, May 31st. More events 8:45 a.m. to the grand finale at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, and even a historical event at 2 p.m. Sunday. Among featured guests are editor of Nebraska Life magazine and author Alan Bartles, the Diamond W. Wrangler Band, and two cowboy poets, Jake Riley, and my next guest. R.P. Smith, thanks for chatting with me this week on Friday Live.
Well, I'm excited to be here.
Your part in Buffalo Common Storytelling Festival is, of course, some of your cowboy poetry. How many performances are you giving during the festival?
I just counted up. It looks like they've got me doing 4 different sets.
And have you done the festival before in McCook?
Yeah, 9 years ago they had me down, and I was kind of the regional feature that year, and I'm a little bigger part of it this year, so excited about it.
Just a little bit of background about you. You've actually traveled quite a bit, even across the country, not just in Nebraska. You're a championship cowboy poet. How did this whole thing get started for you?
The Old West Days Festival in Valentine, Nebraska is where I did my first public performance, and that's been 26 years ago, and it has snowballed from there. Not something I ever really was intending to do. It just worked out really good for me.
Yeah, I'd say one of the things that strikes me when I've seen videos or listened to audio of your poetry, you really are skilled at creating a picture. How does a specific poem start for you?
Well, generally out of some sort of personal experience Yeah, I guess it takes a grain of sand to start an oyster, and it takes a wreck to start a really good cowboy poem. And we're ranch here, and it's a great way to recycle wrecks.
Tell us a little bit about your ranch and how you balance ranching with your cowboy poetry.
They complement each other pretty well. Being gone part of the time, you have to get pretty organized and kind of get your stuff done when you're here. And, of course, I count heavily on friends and neighbors and family, and we don't have any of our kids here all the time, but they're close enough, they kind of help me out when I need it. It's made me a better rancher by being off the place part of the time, and it sure makes me a better poet having that experience.
For the poetry that you're bringing to McCook, to the Buffalo Common Storytelling Festival, are you bringing any new material, or are you going to bring some old poems, or a mix, maybe?
It'll be a mix. I haven't exactly had a writer's block, but I haven't been as productive writing the last few years. In the last 9 years, I've got a lot that they haven't heard, so it'll definitely be a mix.
Before I let you go, RP, I have to admit, I discovered a surprise recently looking you up online. Years ago, I don't even remember where I was, but someone was telling me in a hotel swimming pool, I can't make this up, about this cowboy poet they heard, and he described the whole poem to me, but he couldn't remember the poem itself. And I never forgot the title. The poem was Thumper the Fire Jumper. The Smoke Jumper. And I tell you what, I just found out days ago that that was by you.
Yeah.
So it's come full circle for me, RP.
That was a fun one. Some folks I know in Broken Bow, their father was celebrating his 65th birthday, and they sent me probably the dumbest thing he'd ever done and asked me if I could make a poem out of it, and that's just a wonderful way to get material. I haven't had too many stories to top that one.
We should probably tell listeners just a little about what that's about.
I could just do the poem if you'd like me to.
Absolutely.
From what I hear in the fall of the year, farmers often hurry, a race to win, get the harvest in, or contend with nature's fury. The trucks with fuel to help well-schooled, they would soon be on their way, but a dog with the habit of chasing rabbits and sent all plans astray. The end of the chase found a rabbit in place and a pipe used for irrigation. The dog raised a fuss and the farmer did cuss this unneeded irritation. It should be stated this pipe was gated. On said gates the dog did chew, much to the alarm of the man at the farm and his harvest crew. Get the rabbit out, the farmer did shout, distressed by this delay. The combine was running, the engine a gun, and they must be on their way. With the bar they did bang and them rabbit ears rang, but he stayed fast in his retreat. This raised farmer's ire, then piqued his desire to loose rabbit from his seat. The next laid plan involved a gasoline can emptied into the pipe through a gate. It was hoped the strong smell would bend Bunny's will and dismiss him before it got late. There is no persuading a rabbit evading the jaws of a slobbering hound, so the smell was a fright that Bunny sat tight till the farmer's new plan was found. In this man's defense, a thought might make sense when spawned in the heat of a battle, but when it's carried out, it would not make you doubt that his head could be used for a raffle. The plan that did hatch involved a match dropped in through a hole in the pipe. As the match left his hand, he would soon understand the problem with a plot of this type, because it was up, up, and away as Bunny Flambe from the end of the pipe was a-leaving, while a fumigated hound with nose singed all around gave up on roast rabbit retrieving. But farmer and crew down the bunny trail flew, stomping fires like Smokey the Bear, shouting colorful names while extinguishing flames ignited by smoldering hair. The rest of the day spent wondering where Thumper went. Would he hole up in machine shed or barn? And it wasn't no joke when asked, "Do you smell smoke?" as we come to the end of our yarn. The moral of my tale you'll find without fail may save you from much grief and worry. Always beware of singeing your hair when lighting your pipe in a hurry.
RP, thank you so much for reciting your poetry for us, and have a great time in McCook at the Buffalo Common Storytelling Festival.
Well, thanks, and one more thing I'd like to mention. The Museum of Nebraska Art is doing a Western art show in North Platte that following Saturday, and I'm also speaking for the reception for that in the evening, so I'm getting all my art and culture combined into just a week's length there. So I'm excited about that event coming up also.
The Buffalo Common Storytelling Festival starts in McCook next week, Friday, May 31st through Sunday, June 2nd. Find out more about R.P. Smith, the festival, and anything you hear about on Friday Live by going to our website at netnebraska.org. Just look for the Friday Live page. Old Glory Theater hosts a melodrama presented by the Goner Centennial Players. This year's story connects love and trains.
You've got the hero and the heroine, and they get into all kinds of trouble with the villain. This year we've got a minor villain who looks up to the villain, and he's his right-hand man. And it takes place at the rail yards of the Walker Valley Pine Bush and Pacific Railroad.
Hear my conversation with Pat Runyon from the Centennial Players on the Friday Live Extra podcast. Download wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks for listening to Friday Live. Ahead here at the Mill in downtown Lincoln, we'll get a preview of the next concert on the Brownville Concert Series. And in about 12 minutes, I'll meet a couple of local authors who have not only their own series of books, but their own publishing company. Next, I'm joined by artists Bob Esquivel, Bonnie Sparks, and Pam Young. They have work going up at Gallery 9 in Lincoln in a show called Mysterious Suggestions, and that's on display June 5th through the 30th, and the opening reception is in 2 weeks, June 7th, from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Bob, Bonnie, and Pam, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. How did the three of you come to be the three artists featured for June?
It was our turn, and I think we got short straws, maybe.
It was your turn. I like that.
Bob and I have had shows together for several years, and sometimes separate, but sometimes we share canvases and trade back and forth, and it's great to have a third person doing 3D, so we invited Pam to be part of that, so it's a great combination.
Yeah, I was going to say, Vonnie, you and Bob both create paintings, and then Pam, you work in ceramics, so I'm kind of wondering how all of your different, you know, collections fit under the title Mysterious Suggestions.
Oh, it's kind of a mystery.
Thus the mysterious,
yeah,
right?
You have to come and see it.
We don't know.
Who came up with the title?
Well, it was one of those Bob and Vonnie collaborations, actually. You know, it was, no, it's seriously, if I remember, Vonnie said something about mystery. And she said, we should do something with the word mystery. And so I sent her a list of possibilities that I had, just, you know,
like eight different titles.
But I headed the list with a thing saying, here are some mysterious suggestions, just trying to be cute. I get the email back and it says, I didn't like any of the ones you sent me, but I really love that thing about mysterious suggestions. So I went, cool, let's go with that then. So.
Sometimes the title comes from, you know, the most unusual places, I suppose. Now, Pam, we have two photos of your work on our Facebook page. One is a mug featuring, I'm probably going to get it wrong, it's either a fawn or a foal and its mother. And the other is kind of a taller vessel with what looks like a black and white dragon on it. How did you first get started in ceramics?
I've always loved ceramics, but it was after my kids grew up and I actually had time.
That's often the case, right? What was your very first piece? How did you learn?
There's a little shop on 33rd and Randolph, and I drove by there all the time and saw a sign for classes, and it's like, I signed up.
And Bob and Bonnie, you've both been on the show in the past. Maybe you could share just a little bit about Gallery 9 and its history and how Gallery 9 works.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because July will be the 25th anniversary of Gallery 9. It's located in the Mission Arts Building, which a lot of Lincoln old-timers will remember as the old city mission. And a lot of really, really real old-timers, or maybe dead Lincolnites, will remember that it was once a brothel, which was, you know, a kind of a claim to fame. But anyway, it's 124 South 9th. And the gallery that's in the Mission Arts Building is called Gallery 9. So we're having a big show, a big celebration anniversary thing in July, and inviting back artists who were there originally and maybe, you know, moved away or parted ways or whatever. So it's going to be a really cool, eclectic show, I think, because it's going to have stuff from a lot of people. And so we're excited about that.
Oh, we'll have to check back in July and see how the anniversary celebration is shaping up. Work by Bob Esquivel, Vonnie Sparks, and Pam Young is featured in Mysterious Suggestions at Gallery 9. The work will be up June 5th through the 30th, and there's an opening reception Friday, June 7th at 6:30 p.m. for First Friday. Bob, Vonnie, and Pam, great talking with you.
Nice to be here.
Thanks, Genevieve.
Find links to Gallery 9 or to other events you hear about this morning on the Friday Live page. That's at netnebraska.org. Informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming, this is NET Radio. Stay with Friday Live this morning. We'll meet two authors whose focus is young readers, and in about 12 minutes, we'll meet former Marine Rob Kukler, whose book is about the journey he took with a three-legged dog. Music in Brownville is the next topic of discussion here with Jan Wright of the Brownville Concert Series. Specifically, she's here to tell us about three performances given by iconic diva Christina Bianco, May 31st, June 1st, and June 2nd in Brownville. Jan, welcome.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Now, she is known as the woman of a thousand voices. Why is that?
Oh, my God. She can sound like anybody. She can sing like Celine Dion, Adele, Barbara Streisand, Liza Minnelli, Cher, Judy Garland, you name it, Kristen Chenoweth, a lot of Broadway stars. You know, I mean, she's just... She can just nail them, and she can do it in like 50 seconds. I don't know. It's just she's amazing.
But, it's pretty fun to hear someone sort of assume that character or that voice. I think, and she has a lot of TV credits to her name as well. I noticed.
That's right. She's been on Ellen DeGeneres and the Today Show and other places. Queen Latifah's show, and she's also played on Broadway and the West End in London. She's played the Hippodrome in London and other clubs and things there and theaters. And I mean, it's just really exciting that she's bringing this show to little old Brownville.
Now, what are you expecting from her Brownville performance? Because I also see the word comedy in the description, in addition to all these voices that she's able to do.
Well, she's just, if you look at her YouTube video, which got 24 million hits.
Oh, my goodness.
You will see she's funny, and she is just wonderful with an audience. A lot of rapport back and forth there, a lot of, you know, give and take, and the audience is almost like a part of the act. And that's what makes it so exciting. I mean, she just sucks you right in.
And now when you say she's bringing her show to little old Brownville, is this the first time she's in Nebraska, or is this a return trip for her?
Actually, this is the first time she's ever been in Nebraska and the first time she has been to Brownville. And that happens most of the time with many of the performers that we bring in. They play first in Brownville, and then later, for instance, Tony DeZier has played three times in Brownville, mm-hmm. and he's going to be playing in Omaha. Well, he's played there twice. He'll be playing there twice, actually. And a number of our people have Tierney Sutton. She played first in Brownville, and then she played Omaha. So you can see him first in Brownville.
Now, what's coming up in July following the Christina Bianco set of performances?
Oh, this is so exciting. We have the Grand Dame of Cabaret, absolutely, Marilyn May. She was Johnny Carson's favorite cabaret singer. She was on the Johnny Carson show about 73 times, and she was here for our very first season in 1991. And the church burned down, and we had to put her at the Arbor Manor for her performance, and then we rebuilt the church and so forth. But we brought her back for our 20th anniversary, and that was 2010. We brought her to the Rococo Theater in Lincoln and introduced her to Lincoln as well. And
she's got stories to tell from having been to Brownville, for sure.
Well, and she just turned 91 a couple of weeks ago.
Goodness.
While she was singing at Feinstein's 54 Below to, you know, standing ovations. And I just decided last year when she turned 90, we've got to have her back.
That's amazing.
And she is playing in Omaha tonight at the Holland Center.
Oh, wow.
But she will be in Brownville for three shows, just 100 people. And it's a lot better when you see them in Brownville. You actually get to meet and talk to the performer.
It's kind of
so
like
you get to meet and talk to Marilyn May.
Yeah. Kind of like being in the living room with the performer, I think.
Oh, it's
having
a lot better
right
than
there.
Being in the living room. Because, you know, I mean, it really is. It's better than being in a living room.
They're right there.
But it's way better than being in front of when they're singing with a symphony or, you know, a huge crowd or 5,000 of your closest friends, you know.
Well, I've been talking here with Jan Wright about the Brownville Concert Series. Christina Bianco brings her musical comedy and amazing impressions to the stage in Cabaret a week from today, 7:30 p.m., and then Saturday, June 1st, also 7:30 p.m., with a Sunday concert on June 2nd at 2 p.m. Jan, thanks for joining me here at the Mill to tell us about everything going on in Brownville.
Love being here. Thanks.
You bet. You'll want to visit the NET website for links to more information, but also to learn more about next week's show. We'll be taping shows in Alliance and Llewellyn and broadcasting them over the next couple of weeks. Head over to netnebraska.org/radio and look for the Friday Live page to learn more. Next guests here at the Mill are authors and founders and owners of their own publishing company. Together, Nicole and Tevin Hansen have created Henderson Publishing Company. Award-winning author Tevin Hansen is also a musician, and he is appearing in Lincoln on a series of events the second Saturday of the month at the Museum of American Speed in Lincoln called Words and Wheels. The next one of those is June 8th at 10 a.m., and Nicole, who is with us as well this morning, is also a children's book author and poet who works to promote literacy through her work. So let's get to know these two a little this morning. Tevin and Nicole, it's great to meet you.
Hello, good.
Good
it's
morning.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
How did you get connected with the series of events at the Museum of American Speed?
Well, I actually met Sarah at another event down in the Haymarket, and we got to talking about different things that they were planning, and we thought, hey, let's kind of combine these two things and let people know the museum's a bit of a hidden gem in Lincoln, and we're excited to kind of bring in some new fans.
Yeah, so the June 8th event will feature songs and crafts associated with what you're talking about, Tevin, with your book, Giant of Geography, and there are some other hands-on events as well. What's the importance of making those books interactive for readers?
What we've taken to calling it is rock and read. So we come out, I rock, play guitar, play some music with the kids, give the kids a music lesson and talk about music, how music affects your brain and gets your creativity going. And it affects everything to do with math and science and art. And then I'll read from one of the books, I think on the next one, June 8th, I think we're doing Sea Serpent of Science.
Oh, okay.
And we're
going
to do Slime, and then Giant of Geography, and then the new one we just published yesterday is Alien of Astronomy.
Nice. Congratulations.
Mix in,
nice series.
Music, some reading, and talk about it. And then if there's time at the end, we'll rock some more, play some more music. And usually 9 times out of 10, with the music and the reading, the kids actually choose for me to read more rather than play music, which is surprising.
How did you first get started in music?
Oh, I picked up the guitar when I was 16 and just immediately started writing songs and just never stopped. So
just became kind of a thing. Now, Henderson Publishing combines your two last names, Nicole, your maiden name, Anderson, and Tevin's last name, Hansen. As both of you were kind of following sort of similarly creative, we'll say, career paths, how did you decide to found and create this family business that you have?
Well, we started way back in 2010. We were making handmade books for friends and family.
This was back in 2007.
2007, yes.
With our handmade books and me drilling holes through them and tying rope through them. So this is going way.
And making Christmas presents. So it's been a passion project for both of us for a really long time. And one day we just went, you know what? We could actually do this. And so we sent out a call for submissions and end up, we now have 18 authors that we publish. We should hit our 50th title end of this year, maybe early next year. So it's turned into something a little bit bigger than drilling holes into paper.
Yeah, I've read that you've invited in authors from all around the globe.
We do. We have four authors from the UK, one from Canada, and we recently worked with an illustrator from Australia. So we really are a global business now. But it's exciting because we also have four or five authors that are from Nebraska, too. So...
Now, Tevin, we mentioned your book, Giant of Geography, and then also Sea Serpent of Science. This is all part of a series of chapter books. And can we expect even more from this series? Or how many?
Absolutely. I'm working on a very big, I'm at the tail end of a very large writing project. I'm almost done, and I can't wait to get back to this series. I'll definitely hit 10. So the fourth one was actually just published yesterday. So once I finish this big writing project, it's about a somewhat famous lady called Rose O'Neill. So, this year she was elected to, I think it's the Women's Hall of Fame, is that right? Just this year.
What should we know about Rose O'Neill if we don't know?
Oh, I wish I had the expert, a friend of mine that I'm, another local Lincoln author that I'm working with. He's the expert, but she's... part of suffrage. She passed away in 1944, but she is the inventor of the Kewpie dolls. Everybody seems to know who the Kewpie dolls. That's her.
Yes.
But she's more famous for her, I want to say, adult artwork. Mm-hmm. So, and she's really talented, and she's famous all in Japan. And she had a big art exhibit, I think, in 1921 or 22 in, I want to say, Paris. So she's really talented outside of the Kewpies. So in the story that I'm working on, I do bring the Kewpies into it, but also bring in her sweet monsters is what she called them. But once I'm done with that, I will immediately get back on the Junkyard Adventures, and I'll probably do a group of three, three more probably in 2020, three more in 2021.
Well, it sounds like I can almost see you making the list in your head,
right? They're already plotted out. You just need to sit down and write them.
We'll be sure to keep up with you. Thanks so much for being here this morning and telling us a little bit about yourselves.
Thank you.
Tevin and Nicole Hansen are with Henderson Publishing. They are both authors. Tevin Hansen is the guest on the Wheels and Words series of events at the Museum of American Speed in Lincoln. That next event is Saturday, June 8th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. And you can find more information on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. It was named a best book of 2018 by the New York Times Publishers Weekly, NPR, and many others. All About Books host Pat Leach reviews the work, which has been described as eloquent and painfully honest.
Kiese Lehman is a black professor of English at the University of Mississippi in Jackson, which is also the town where he grew up. This memoir focuses on his relationship with his mother, his relationship to food and his weight, his relationship to racism and white people, and on the difficult aspects of his life that he seems to least want to explore, but must.
Heavy, an American memoir by Kiese Lehman. Hear the review on our website, netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Coming up in about 8 minutes, I'll have highlights from our arts calendar, and there's also a dance concert, jazz music, and Shakespeare to talk about. My next guest is a native Nebraskan, former U.S. Marine and Iraq War veteran, who has written a memoir called A Dog Named Beautiful. He's in Lincoln, hosted by Indigo Bridge Books for an event at Stransky Dog Run in Peterson Park tonight at 7 p.m. Dogs and humans are welcome for that book discussion. In the event of bad weather, the event will be at Bailey's Deluxe Pet Care. Rob Kugler is here to tell us about his book and his journey on the way to creating that book. Rob, it's nice to meet you and welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I will admit that dogs are a very important part of my life, and some listeners may know that if they've heard me mention that before on the air. So I also want to say to you, though, thank you for being willing to share all the parts of your story, because this story does cover the full range of emotions and experiences, including grief.
Yeah, definitely. I go into that with more than just the loss of a pet as well. There's a few human losses that I talk about, and I feel like that's one of the things that as human beings we can all relate to, no matter what our belief systems are, and through love and loss. So I felt like sharing that was important.
Yeah, the dog is primarily a book about the dog in the book is Bella, and it's primarily about her, who seems to have been a bit of a therapy dog for you, though, in a way, after you returned from Iraq.
Yeah, she. What's funny that you say about that, we actually went through the training for her to get registered as a therapy dog so that I could volunteer with her in hospitals. But then when her illness came about, we ended up not following through on that. So we didn't provide therapy in hospitals, but we provided therapy clear across the country. But she also provided it, of course, to me as well.
Yeah, it seems like it was for each other, really, for both
of
you.
Yeah, I mean, we complimented each other quite a bit, and she definitely taught me many things about life and about myself.
So to give people a picture in their heads, Bella, we have to picture a big, goofy chocolate lab, right?
Beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful.
She's
yeah.
absolutely gorgeous. There are pictures on our Facebook page, so if you go to Facebook and look for NET Radio, you can see some photos there. So she's kind of helping you get well, and then she gets sick. What happened with that diagnosis?
Yeah, well, it was, I'm sure you're familiar with the hero's journey. Yes, of course, right? So how we build our character up, and then we throw rocks at him, and then he falls down, and then we get to build back up. And
right.
There was a time in my life where I thought that I was on the as far down as we could go, and hopefully was starting to work back up. And it was during that time that I got the diagnosis from the veterinarian that Bella had osteosarcoma in her front left leg that had already spread to her lungs. She had been limping for months, and we had been treating it as a shoulder injury, and I'd taken her in multiple times, and finally when we realized what it was already in her lungs by that time. So they gave her 3 months to live. It was pretty heavy in her lungs when it was originally found, and so that's when we made the decision to go ahead and take her leg, because she was in so much pain. And that was a hard decision to make, but it was the best decision that we made, because as soon as it happened, she was back to her happy self. And she leaned into me. She got up out of anesthesia and, walked out on three legs. And even the vet said, "Oh my God, she's standing." And I was like, "Yeah, that doesn't surprise me." Because she was as tough as she was beautiful.
So then why did you decide that a road trip was what you needed?
Okay, well, Bella and I had traveled multiple times from Nebraska to California and back. And so she was a real road warrior. That's what she liked the most, was to swim and to get in the car to go there. And, her favorite thing was to have her head out of the window And my favorite thing was to look at it.
Right.
Just to watch her head. And if people were in the car with me, I'd always like pester them. I'd like, look at her. You know, and they're like, yeah, she's doing that. She was doing that 5 minutes ago. You know, I was like, yeah, but she's doing it again now. Look how happy she is.
Well, there's just something that's so pure about the joy that is on a dog's face when they're really doing what they love to do.
Yeah. And I honestly wish that I could have had a collection of oncoming traffic's faces over the years that we were out there, because so many smiles just generated on people who saw her smile.
Right.
And that to me was, I felt like very purposeful, to spread her love around.
There's that ripple effect.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to write the book?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah, so there was a year to write it, and then another year for the editing process.
Hmm.
And
you're from Nebraska originally.
Yeah, I'm from Broken Bow.
Broken Bow.
Yeah, 10 years here in Lincoln. I mean, the Haymarket is one of my favorite places in the entire country.
Uh-huh.
You know, I tell people about it all the time. You know, it's food, so much food here, so much good food.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, Rob Kugler will share his book at an event that's tonight at 7 p.m. The book is titled A Dog Named Beautiful. Did you name her Bella?
Awesome. Yes.
You did?
Yes.
I love it. Yeah. The human and dog-friendly event for this book is at Stransky Dog Run in Lincoln. And if it rains, which it may, as it's been doing, we don't know.
The forecast is showing that it's supposed to be sunny from 1 p.m. on.
Okay, excellent.
That's what the forecast is showing.
So there you go.
Yeah,
then it'll probably be at Stransky. But if it has to be moved, it'll be Bailey's Deluxe Pet Care. So, Rob, thank you again so much for sharing your story. Yes. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. I hope to see everybody there tonight.
I'm Genevieve Randall, and you're listening to Friday Live, broadcasting from the Mill Coffee and Tea here on NET Radio. I'm joined by Robert Goldberg next, host of Nebraska Concerts, here to tell us what's coming up this weekend that he's excited about. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Genevieve. Thank you. As you know, not everyone can get out to a performance or other event this weekend, but we bring you one every Sunday at 1 p.m. Central. Genevieve, I know you love your job, but have you ever whistled while you work?
Whistle while you work, yes, I know that.
Well, it turns out people in Vienna did that 200 years ago, and Beethoven took notice. He wrote a fun little trio that he called the Gassenhauer Trio. Mm-hmm. Gasse is the German word for a street or a little lane.
Street, yeah.
And it referred to a song that was whistled as people would walk down the street. So it's a fun little piece that you can walk away from whistling.
So there's a Beethoven piece about basically walking and whistling.
Who would have thought, right? Beethoven is the big, serious, manic, angry composer, but no, he was happy. He could walk down the street whistling. In fact, the tune that he uses is a song that is called Before I Go to Work.
Maybe he was whistling while he was working on it.
He must have whistled a lot while he worked.
Well, we'll look forward to that this weekend on Nebraska Concerts. Robert Goldberg is the host of Nebraska Concerts, and you can listen to this week's show Sunday at 1 p.m. Central. You can stream it online as well and learn more on the Nebraska Concerts page at netnebraska.org/radio. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. In Wayne, Blue Cat Gallery and Studio hosts a show featuring textile artworks by members of the Midwest Fiber Art Alliance called Driven to Abstraction. It's up now through June 29th. In Omaha, Film Streams will host a Q&A with director Michelle Memren and producer Katie Pearl after the showing of The Rest I Make Up as part of the Great Plains Theater Conference. That's on Tuesday at 7 p.m. And this coming Tuesday at the Museum of Nebraska Art in Kearney, the show Compelled to Tell Drawing will open, exploring how and why of sketching and drawing. The work will be up through September. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org. And support for programming comes from Buffalo Comet Storytelling and Music Festival, a summertime tradition for 23 years, running May 31st through June 2nd with storytellers, poets, musicians, and more.
noisy traffic or a loud passenger in your car just interrupt your Friday Live experience? Well, the digital world has given us a do-over. We podcast the show each week, so you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. I'm Genevieve Randall. On June 6th, the Flatwater Shakespeare Company opens with their presentation of Two Gentlemen of Verona, a Shakespeare comedy that reflects the challenges of friendships, love, and loyalty. Joining me today is Summer Lukasiewicz, the executive director of Flatwater, along with Patsy Coe-Johns, who is directing the show, and actor Emily Ernst, who is in the role of Julia. Summer, Patsy, and Emily, it's great to have you all here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Summer, what's the synopsis of this Shakespeare play?
I'm actually going to pass that question to Patsy, and she'll introduce the show.
Well, it's a very interesting show. I divided it into four categories. First, friendships, follies, and forgiveness. And supposedly, it's one of Shakespeare's first plays. We can't, of course, ever prove anything. And it's also about first loves and all the follies that happen with first loves, and they definitely happen in this play, not only in the first loves, but in some of the writing. You can tell that Shakespeare is a beginning playwright, and we've had a lot of fun with that, finding different places where we find his mistakes, but it also forecasts some plays that he's doing later on. You see lines from a lot of different plays. But the follies of love and not necessarily being true blue to your friends and all the mistakes that these young lovers make and the heartache they cause each other. But the interesting thing about it is, just like we have to forgive Will Shakespeare for being a young playwright, these young lovers forgive each other instantly. And I think there might be a great lesson in that for those of us who are a little bit older than these young lovers, is that forgiveness is the key to life, to making a happy life, and they do it easily. So that's the synopsis.
So, Emily, are there any methods you've used to get into the mindset of your character, Julia?
I studied at Lecoq in Paris last year, and a lot of my way in is physical. Finding which moments the character is turning around, is changing physicality, responding to somebody else, and something we've worked on in rehearsal is just that. Kind of setting up a structure that then you can play within.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about coming at it specifically from the physical.
And of course the text is everything. So we start in the beginning with looking at the meter and you know, Shakespeare's iambic pentameter is like a heartbeat. And, you know, you set up a norm and then significantly break it. And if there's something that's a little different about the line, it's a cue to the emotional state of the character.
And the play is a comedy.
Yes.
So how does humor play a role?
Well, there's a bit with a dog.
There's a dog, and we could have had a dog, but I've always gone by the rule that babies and dogs steal the show, and not necessarily
Indeed.
In a good way.
So, that.
Yeah. So we have a young man playing the dog, and he is fabulous, and it is so funny.
That already sounds funny.
Yeah, just in your reaction. And it is funny. Young love is funny. It's melodramatic and funny and full of heart.
To me, a lot about these characters involves feeling things really intensely for the first time and being completely swept away with that. And the character that I play gives up her lands, her goods. She says, my goods, my lands, my reputation. She leaves to pursue this guy.
Yeah. Wow.
And lacks a lot of the foresight that the people around her have.
She's so innocent. She is so innocent. She tells her maid, he would never lie to me. He would never say an untruth. He would never be unfaithful to me.
And we've just seen his monologue about that.
Going.
Yeah. He has this soliloquy that is almost like Iago or Edmund or any of the villains. And he says, I'll forget my Julia's alive. I'll forget my, you know, my friend will be a villain. And
she is dead.
Yeah. I'll say she is dead. Yeah.
So even though this was written in like the 1500s, there's so much that's so very identifiable to an audience today.
Yeah, and he's struggling with it too.
You can see the young William Shakespeare going through the same struggles.
Yeah. I wonder how old he was or who he was, you know,
in love
seeing
with.
Yeah, during the
and
time.
If there
that
were
he wrote
several.
There may have been. Well, the play is The Two Gentlemen of Verona. Now that will be performed in the Swan Theater at the Stables at Wyuka June 6th through the 9th and 13th through the 16th. And then there will be a tour of shows in Lincoln Park.
Yes, we're continuing that tradition of touring the parks. This year, we're also adding a show. We're taking the performance to the People's City Mission, which is not open to the public, but we're very excited to partner with them and take the show there. And then take it to four parks. We're going to Belmont, Trago, Cooper, and Havelock Parks again this year. Ivana Cohn is partnering with us again, and will give us a show-inspired flavor, which they never reveal until they give it to us. So I don't know what that is, but it's always wonderful. The lovely
can't,
Andy
can't know
Dillahay.
The flavor of the ice cream yet. Yeah.
It's always really creative, and it's named with the show, and they always really take the inspiration and come with it. So we're very excited to continue that tradition, and that's made possible by the Cooper Foundation.
And how did you get hooked up with doing the show at the City Mission?
It was an idea I had, and I reached out to them, would you be interested? And they were very excited. They have an indoor space that I told them my actors will be very excited about. It's air-conditioned. We'll be inside for that one show. Although the weather's been such that we might not need the air-conditioning quite so badly this summer.
The Two Gentlemen of Verona, that's the show. And we'll have more links on the Friday Live page where you can link through to more information. Emily, Patsy, and Summer, thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
thank
Genevieve.
Thank you for having us, Genevieve.
Radio you want, wherever you need it, across Nebraska. This is NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Lincoln Contemporary Dance will be here to tell us about their upcoming concert in just a few minutes. And another reminder here that we are doing shows in Western Nebraska. Ooh. Taping this next week in Alliance and Llewellyn, and then broadcasting the Alliance show a week from today and the Llewellyn show in 2 weeks. You're welcome to come to our tapings if you can be there on that end of the state. And you can find more about how to attend and what else NET is taking out on the road by going to netnebraska.org/on the road. Well, soon it will be June, and in Lincoln that means another Jazz in June with concerts every Tuesday evening outdoors under the trees just west of Sheldon Museum of Art at UNL. So joining me to talk about those concerts and other activities associated with Jazz in June is coordinator Spencer Munson. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning. Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you back on the show. So this year you have a mix of performers from both near and far. Who starts things off on June 4th?
Yeah, we have a really fun New Orleans jazz funk band that first week with kind of a funny name. They're called Naughty Professor. They have won numerous awards in the New Orleans jazz and R&B scene. Big horn section, lots of energy. I'm really excited for them.
And June 11th, you have a group that has ties to Brazil, Utah, and Nebraska, which is interesting. Who are they and what type of music are they playing?
Yes, there's a gentleman that's the director of the Water for Food Institute at the Innovation Campus at UNL. And we actually had booked this band in 2014, and it's one of the only times we've ever gotten completely rained out. So we are excited to have them back. Christopher is an amazing amazing part of the community, and he has a bunch of gentlemen that he used to teach with and or studied with in Brazil that are all now professors and live in Utah. So he's flying the whole band out, and they are going to do kind of a retrospective of classic Brazilian jazz, Antonio Carlos Jobim, and a lot of the early bossa nova movement.
And so, I'll just put a plug in here for our Friday Live Extra. Look ahead, because yes, in coming weeks, there will be an interview with Christopher from,
oh,
that, from that very band with our jazz host, host of Jazz Currents, Tom Einick. So that's awesome, coming up. Then on June 18th, Chicago trumpeter Marquise Hill and his Black Tet,
yes,
are playing. I like the name Black Tet. And on June 25th, you close the season with a saxophonist from London. So for anyone who doesn't know either of those performers, what are you expecting, sure, to hear from those two shows?
Well, Marquise Hill is one of the most well thought of trumpeters in the country right now. Originally came out of Chicago, been living in New York. He's backed a ton of people. He's put out 5 or 6 records on his own. I think he's probably the most prolific artist that we have on the season this year. He's also bringing a young vibraphonist who just put out a record on Blue Note. His name is Joel Ross. And I would say that he's one of the top vibraphonists in the world. And he's really exciting. I mean, watching the vibraphones is just fun to watch. So we're really excited about that. The Black Tet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nubia Garcia is this woman that plays the saxophone. I've had the opportunity to see her a couple times in New York the last couple years. And there's this wonderful jazz scene blossoming in London. A lot of second and third generation Caribbean and South African folks, and the mesh of culture and the appreciation for the classics and jazz, it's really amazing. And you don't see many women that play the saxophone, and she's going to be dynamic. It'll be great.
You know, it occurs to me, Spencer, I can tell that you get excited about what you do, so you're the right person for the job, clearly,
I do,
right?
I do, yeah.
So what's it like for you as you're planning for this, leading up to the June events? Do you get to go travel? How do you connect with the bands and musicians?
I do. It's a combination of having really good rapport with a lot of jazz agents. They're sending me ideas all the time. I'm constantly, you know, on my Spotify listening to new artists. But I do get the opportunity to go to New York. There's a jazz festival in the beginning of January. It's frigid cold in New York, but it's really fun. You hop around all these clubs in Greenwich Village. It's called Winter Jazz Fest. And they bring in artists from all over the world and, of course, showcase the great jazz that's already in New York. But it's really neat. I've been able to go for the past 3 years now and to see artists start there and where they go. You know, they start at the bottom and then you see them working up their ladder in New York, and it's really exciting to see that progression and then be able to kind of cherry pick some of those artists. And Marquise Hill came with the Nebraska Jazz Orchestra a couple years ago, but I've been able to see Joel Ross and see his band evolve from that, and then they've been doing British showcases in New York, and so I really love everything that's coming out of that, because there's lots of electronic and hip-hop influences, which are also loves of mine. So,
well, it's nice to see that kind of interweaving of local, national, and even international now. And there's always other aspects to this concert series, like sometimes there's been tours or there's the market. What other events are orbiting around the concerts?
So we're very fortunate. Linda Hubke, who helps organize the farmers market here in the Haymarket, helps put together a really great market of vendors, not both food and crafts, right outside the Lead Center on 12th and R. So you could come at 5 o'clock, grab a picnic, maybe do a little shopping, but that's always really fun. And then starting at 6, we do various tours of campus architecture. It's, you know, and we're celebrating Nebraska's 150th this year, so those tours will be specifically poignant about the history of the campus and its growth. We partner with the Rec Center for bike valet, so if you want to bike down and not worry about parking, you can check your bike. We also do yoga. We're collaborating with Read Aloud this year. They're going to do a children's reading program. We also collaborate with the Cause Collective, so there's a number of nonprofits, you know, specifically maybe arts and culture nonprofits that set up too, so that you can figure out how to get more involved in your community.
Jazz in June. It all gets started again on June 4th, just west of the Sheldon Museum of Art at UNL in downtown Lincoln. Performances are at 7 p.m., preceded by the market at 5 p.m. Jazz in June coordinator is Spencer Munson. Thanks so much for talking with me this morning.
Always happy to be on.
For more information about Jazz in June concerts and the market and other events, go to netnebraska.org/radio and boogie on over to the Friday Live page. Omaha Community Playhouse has a new production coming up. Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO has more.
Omaha Community Playhouse's season finale, opening next week, brings the sights and sounds of early century New York to the stage. Ragtime, the musical based on the novel by E.L. Doctorow, weaves narratives of America's upper and lower classes and the city's burgeoning immigrant community. Some of the era's historical characters appear on stage as well, like Harry Houdini, Booker T. Washington, and J.P. Morgan. And while these competing groups come into conflict, they also find some harmony. Veteran Playhouse actor Jody Vaccaro playing the role of mother.
I think especially at that time in history, there was much more of a tendency for different groups to stay a little bit more in their community. But we see a lot of interweaving right off the bat. Early on in the storyline, mother finds an African-American baby in her garden, and, you know, what do you do with that? Well, she doesn't really see lines of people being different. You know, I think she just wants to take care of anyone and everyone, and that's a really powerful thing, and I think that's a lot of where we go with that story is how are we going to take care of each other? How do we be what does family mean? There are a lot of really big questions that I think the show addresses.
The Playhouse works hard to give audiences the best possible performance. Long days of rehearsal, custom moving set pieces, finely detailed costumes. And actors make sure that story is not lost in the mix.
This role of mother has been really fun in that I think she has a really great arc and story to play. Who she is at the beginning of the show to who she is at the end of the show has a long journey, and I think she changes a lot and she grows a lot, and so that has been both challenging and really fun to find what it is that brings her to a different place. She has a sort of unusual opportunities to explore life outside of her home, outside of her family, which a woman at that point in time might not ordinarily get to do. And so I kind of think she's an accidental feminist. She doesn't mean to be a feminist. I don't think she sets out with that goal in mind. But just because she's thrust into some situations where her husband's not there, she picks up the work and she finds out that she's really good at it and she likes doing it, kind of ahead of her time.
Given the title, this production is also largely about music. Highlighting the iconic rhythms and dance steps of the era, the band will play on stage, not in the pit, making them part of the show.
This is one of the bigger shows that I've done in recent history. There are 38 people in the cast, which is a lot of folks on stage. And it's a lot of big ensemble work. So there's a lot of choreography and movement happening, and coordinating all of that is a lot of effort, but a lot of fun to see it all sort of come together. And then it's kind of interspersed with some really great ballads and big singing, which is really fun to hear. And I kind of feel like you get 38 people singing and it's a wall of sound. It's pretty awesome to be a part of.
Ragtime opens next week, Friday, May 31st at the Omaha Community Playhouse, with shows running Wednesdays through Sundays until June 30th. For more information or tickets, visit omahaplayhouse.com. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirschhorn.
I'm Genevieve Randall. The Lincoln Contemporary Dance Project has two performances next month at the Johnny Carson Theater in Lincoln on June 7th and June 8th. And joining me now to talk about them is one of the founders of the project, Maribel Cruz. Good morning, Maribel.
Good morning, Genevieve. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to have you back on the show.
I'm so excited to be here.
Talk about some contemporary dance here this morning. Is there a theme for this year's performance?
I would say the theme for this year is crisis in a generalized way. It seems that a lot of the choreographers have had some interesting life experiences, and as we often do, we direct channel that energy into creating art.
Yeah.
Let's
dig into that just a little bit, because you have a number of different choreographers creating pieces and a number of different people dancing those pieces. So what do those choreographers take into consideration in their process?
On a very basic level, age, in my case. As we get older, those of us who founded the company, the running joke is, okay, you've got to check knees, ankles, shoulders, hips, and figure out what we can do with bodily parts. More importantly, and more seriously, one of the things that we're really proud of as a collective is that we open the door for anyone to indulge their creative process. And so if you have an idea for a piece, we say go for it. We encourage and support each other. It's a very constructive, collaborative process for us. And when new choreographers come up with pieces, we are very excited to produce those pieces.
When you say crisis, is there an example maybe that you could give? And then how is it expressed through movement?
Well, for example, Beth Govertz, Elizabeth, she found herself an empty nester. And after 15 years of being a parent and running and literally running around, her piece is about, you know, what happens when all of a sudden you have to redefine who you are without your children, without all of the stressors in your life. And so that's a crisis of sorts. Sandra did one piece, it's called Midlife Crisis, which is a rather humorous look at the sexes and, you know, what happens when you're in your 50s and everything starts going south, so to speak.
Gravity is at work.
Yes, exactly. So different kinds of reactions. As I said, some of them are humorous, some more poignant, but definitely working through that process of redefinition.
Can you create a visual for me in my head of something, a movement that someone might do in a piece about those topics? I'm just trying to wrap my head around what an audience member might expect from that. I mean, it's one of those things where dance is so interpretive, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That depending on the movement that you're doing, I'm thinking of if you go back to classical ballet as compared to contemporary dance,
oh, sure.
with a swan and you have the arms in a flapping motion,
fluttering.
Then that's very evocative of a swan, but I can't imagine how you're applying, you know what I mean, to these ideas.
Writhing on the floor always works.
That could say I'm in crisis. Yes.
Yes. But, you know, one of our choreographers this year, Amanda, did a fabulous piece to Danse Macabre. And her crisis, so to speak, their movement is, you know, you look at the hands. Instead of these beautiful lyrical ballet hands, you have these twisted, dark, macabre-looking fingers. And
oh, yeah.
Are those ghosts? Are they willies? What are they?
Right, right. I'm getting a picture now, see? How do you describe to people what contemporary dance is?
Contemporary dance is really an amalgam of, you know, 2,000 years worth of movement. You know, everything brought together. It can be ballet, it can be hip-hop, it can be jazz, it can be ethnic dance. Certainly my piece is very, very rooted in ethnic dance. I studied dance in Senegal, West Africa, and there are a number of movements in my piece that, you know, I call them by the names that, you know, it's papaya fish because that's what I ate for 2 months when I lived in Senegal, papaya and fish. There's some ethnic movement in there, you know, tribal movement. So it's just about everything.
Very cool. The Lincoln Contemporary Dance Project, they have 2 performances next month at the Johnny Carson Theater, which is part of the Lead Center there in downtown Lincoln. That is June 7th and 8th. Both at 7:30 p.m. Maribel Cruz, thanks for telling us about these performances.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Lauren Nunez, Robert Goldberg, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Bedian Organ of Lincoln, celebrating 50 years of designing, building, and servicing pipe organs throughout Nebraska and across the United States. on the web at meetingoregon.com. Also, Union Bank, locally owned with a commitment to lasting customer relationships. Union Bank offers customers personal and business banking, as well as wealth management services. Union Bank, member FDIC. And the Trails and Rails Museum in Kearney, hosting the annual Wagons West celebration on Saturday, June 8th from 10 to 1, celebrating the pioneers who crossed Buffalo County with live demonstrations and hands-on activities. This family-friendly event is open to the public. Information at bchs.us.